wheat, followed by a series of screams. The gunfire from the sighted fanatics stammers and stalls. Rain breaks cover to see that the door at the far end of the suite has been breached, blown inwards by a demo charge. The suite strobes with hellgun fire from the two figures in matte black carapace who set the breach.
"Apologies,"
Cassia Till's voice is hoarse and edged with pain.
"We were waylaid."
Davin Wick goes headlong into the smoke and the fray. Everything is made sharp by the stims, crystal clear as the sighted fanatics move slow around him. They are all skin and bones and bandages. Some have the blood-soaked cloth wound around their eyes, though they still fight like they can see and still try to cut him with jagged blades and shards of black glass. They are so very slow. Wick ducks the strike of the first fanatic and answers it with one of his own, burying his knife blade straight between the sighted's collarbones. It goes deep and grinds against something. Spine, maybe. He pulls the knife clear and kicks the fanatic onto his back. There's not much blood, and what's there is black and smells old. Beside him, Wick sees Jay lock up his las rifle trying to fire. The fanatic he was shooting at smiles wide and goes for him with an augmetic arm that ends with silver-tipped claws. Jay's pale grey eyes widen in slow motion. Wick throws himself at the fanatic, knocking him to the floor. Those silver-tipped claws rake across Wick's flak armor and snag deep in his knife arm, sending it numb. Wick grabs the sighted's head with his other hand and slams it against the tiles. The first time, the fanatic just goes dizzy and blank-eyed. The second time, there's a breaking sound and a spatter of blood. Wick's heart thunders, and he finds he can't quite catch his breath. Over the ringing in his ears, he hears Jay say something. It takes a second to filter through.
"Close,"
he is saying.
"That was close."
Around them, the firefight has stopped. Wick gets up off the dead fanatic and wipes black blood from where it is spattered on his face. Jay is looking at him funny. His grey eyes are still wide. It's a look Wick has seen before, from more folk than he can count. From Raff, all that time ago. From others before that, too, because he's never been the kind to pull his punches. It's shock, that look. That, and a little disgust. He should be used to it, but with the witch dream still hanging over him, it puts hooks in his soul and makes him feel discomforted, like a bright light shone in his eyes. It makes that silver Aquila weigh heavy around his neck.
"Give me your rifle," he says to Jay, as if there's nothing wrong.
The Voidborn hesitates a second.
"Don't make me ask twice," Wick says.
Jay blinks a couple of times and hands over the gun. Wick ejects the cell and resets the firing control, muttering a soft word to the rifle as he does so, before pushing the cell into place and handing it back.
"They lock like that when you don't treat them right," Wick says.
Jay nods a little too quickly.
"Right," he says.
"I don't know who was more vicious, the sighted or your kind."
The voice belongs to Justar, one of the Cavrone Dragoons. He is a sergeant too, marked by his gold epaulettes and the trim of his gloves. Hale told Wick that Justar's squad runs the edge too. It made Wick laugh when he said it. From what he's seen, the Cavrone know nothing at all about the edge. Justar looks down at the fanatic's body with disgust, at the mess of it, and the wide arc of black blood.
"You call yourselves wild, but feral would be better. Savage."
Wick looks down at the body too, then at Justar, with the las burns on his blue and white armor, the scores and scorch marks on that steadfast pattern rifle he carries.
"It's all killing," Wick says, "whether it's pretty or not."
Justar scowls and mutters in his own tongue. Wick has served in the field along the Cavrone plenty of times, often enough to pick up a few things.
"Words like those. I think it's you who is being savage," he says. "Isn't that right, Highborn?"
The look the Cavrone is giving him, he's liable to start a fight. A part of Wick wants him to, too, so that he'll have an excuse to hit back, to break Justar's unbroken nose. his heart stammers, and his fists curl of their own accord. The room runs like paint, bright, aching, everything so damn loud.
Careful, Antari,
Justar says, warningly. Wick can't say anything back. Can't see. He has to shut his eyes.
Sarge!
Justar is gone. It's Chris he's looking at now. She frowns slow, micro-expressions that crease her eyes and pull at the scars on her face. Wick remembers her getting those scars, remembers the way she screamed. All that shrapnel. Such a mess.
What? He says to her.
We're moving,
she says. She is. Everything is. Slowly, like he's underwater. Under the surface of the lake, with the wraiths giggling in his ears, with their cold hands around his throat so he can't get air, can't get out.
Moving, Wick says, trying just to breathe. Right.
Antar's sky is thunderhead grey, like the roaring sea below it. The wind howls, as if it is trying to outdo the ocean's bad temper, rattling the leaves on the singing tree. Birds cry, both the Zane's crows and the seabirds who call the cliffs their home.
It has been a long time since I have seen such a place,
Creesha Ommatid says. She is slumped against the bole of the singing tree, still bleeding from the knife wound in her chest. It's not a physical wound, of course. It is a different kind of hurt, a deeper kind. But despite it, Ommatid is still grinning, not beaten. But Zane does not have to beat Ommatid. She just has to keep her busy. Ommatid tilts her head back to look up at the crown of the tree.
Do you see the way the branches grow from a single point and spread, sometimes even turning back on one another?
Creesha Ommatid lowers her chin again and locks her crystal eyes on Zane.
It is like fate, and just like those branches, some fates are sure. They could take the weight of a body.
She grins wider.
Of a hangman's noose. But not all of them. Some are fragile. Fleeting. They will be broken by the storm.
Zane snorts a laugh. Such wisdom, she says. There is little wonder that you are elevated amongst fools. Ommatid's grin turns serrated.
Fools,
Ommatid says, tasting the word. She spits bloody on the long grass.
No, we are enlightened, freed from our bonds and our limits.
She tilts her head.
Don't you ever wonder what it would be like?
Ommatid asks.
To be free.
For an instant, the scene tears away. Everything but the singing tree. The sea and the wind are replaced with the sound of screams, and Zane sees how it would be to be truly free, how she would break and injure and kill and revel in it, how her false eyes would blaze with unlight as a great winged shadow unfolded itself from her back.
No,
Zane says. The vision disappears, and the cliff returns. The song of birds, Ommatid with her razor grin. Zane wipes her bloody nose on her sleeve and coughs. It rattles her lungs. She limps over to Ommatid, drops to her knees, and pushes her spun wooden knife against the traitor's throat. A bead of blood runs down the dark wood blade.
What you offer, Zane says, it is poison. It is wicked.
Ommatid lets the knife press in.
They all think so, to begin with,
she says.
But pain lends perspective. It is as I said. They all choose, just as your lost hound did.
Zane frowns. A lost hound, she says. You mean Caden Roll? Omatid nods, and it makes more blood run down the blade.
He resisted at first, she says. So desperate to die for his crusade, for his emperor. But when your Duskhound saw what truly waits beyond, he changed his mind. He begged me to spare him.
No, Zane says, you are lying. Duskhounds cannot be broken. Omatid shakes her head.
He was not broken, she says. He was saved. I offered Caden Roll a new fate, and he chose it gladly.
More lies, Zane hisses. Fate cannot be changed.
Oh, my sweet,
Omatid says with a smile.
Of course they can.
The scene changes again, returning Zane to the Sanctum of Bones, to a cold and darkened chamber lined with heavy, rune-marked caskets, just like those that Zane saw in her dream. Shards of mirrored crystal have been placed on the floor to form the sighted spiral mark. Only this time, a throne sits in the place of the eye at the centre, and in the throne, connected to it by needles and cables, and bound by restraints, is Caden Roll. The Duskhound is without his mask and his armour, and his face is so bloody that all Zane can really see are his eyes, glassy and unfocused. He is as still as the dead. He should be dead, but his soul hasn't twisted free all the way. It is tethered somehow, kept from the after. Zane feels a tear trace its way down her cheek as Cretia Omatid approaches Roll, walking the spiral barefoot and leaving bloody prints on the mirrored shards. The caskets around Zane begin to hum, and the spiral of bloody mirrors starts to glow and glitter and light until it is afire with Omatid and Roll at its centre. Zane can hear screams, terrible echoing screams, coming from within the caskets, coming from those like Zane, who are gifted.
No,
Zane whispers.
No.
Then Omatid puts her hands on either side of his head, and Roll starts to scream too. The fire reaches so high and burns so brightly that for a moment it is all that Zane can see, writhing and contorting in shapes that look like faces. The screaming is deafening, from the gifted and Omatid and Roll alike, and Zane finds she cannot help but scream with them. But then, as suddenly as it began, the screaming stops. Zane knows that every one of the psychers in the nine caskets are dead. She feels their souls twist away as the fire burns down to reveal Omatid still standing, and Roll still sitting in the throne. But now he is changed. He is awake, his grey eyes focused and clear. He is not bruised or injured. All of that blood on his face has gone, save for the fate mark that has opened in his skin.
No,
Zane says again, and the Sanctum of Bones blows away like smoke, returning her to Antar's coast edge.
See?
Omatid says.
Fates can be changed for a price.
Zane is still shaking from the sight of the caskets and the fire and the fate mark. They are indelible, marks like that. They seep all the way through to the soul. Zane presses harder on her dark wood knife.
Why did you do it? She asks. Why roll?
Because fate is the sum of countless instances,
Ometid says.
In order for something grand to unfold, many small things must happen first. Particular paths must be chosen at the correct time. Lives must be ended or spared. And of course, blood must be spilt.
That is why you are telling me all of this, Zane says softly. Because you believe it will allow something grand to unfold.
Clever little thing,
Ometid says with a proud smile that turns Zane's stomach.
The fate engines, Zane says. What will you do with them?
Ometid laughs. It is a vicious noise.
Ha ha, my sweet, she says. It is not what we will do with them that should concern you. It is what the Manticore will do with them.
The Manticore? Zane rasps. Who is the Manticore?
But Cretia Ometid does not answer her. Instead, she laughs again. The two Duskhounds left standing are both scored and scorched, bruised and bloodied. When Till breathes, she sounds winded. There is a wide, dark bloodstain on her fatigues from a bad wound in her side. Jeth is dragging a limp, and he has had to cut his face to ease the bruising trying to close his right eye. Rain knows that it isn't really the wounds that hurt them. They are built to take punishment, used to physical pain. What will hurt them is the fact that only two of them are left standing. And Rain knows just how badly that will hurt Andren Fell, too, when he finds out.
What happened up there? She asks.
They are moving up through the Sanctum of Bones, through a chamber lined with boiling vats, sluices, and catch trays. Clusters of candles stand around them, half as tall as the Antari are. Polished skulls watch them from the recessed niches on the walls. Till is still wearing her Duskhound's mask, so Rain cannot see her face. But there is a hesitation in her before she answers, a visible tensing.
They tried to break us. Ometid tried.
Till puts her hand to that wound at her waist.
She underestimated what it would take.
The shielding was fueled by witches,
Jeth says. He has that same sour tone to his voice that the other Antari do when saying the word witches.
Nine of them.
They kept saying something over and over, Till says. Protect the engines. Engines.
Rain stops and turns to look at Lydia Zane. Lie and Wrath drop her bodily to the ground as lightning arcs from her scalp. The Psyche lands on her hands and knees.
Throne, says Lie. Oh, throne.
Wrath and Lie both take a step back from the Psyche. Rain doesn't. She moves closer and drops into a crouch so she can hear exactly what Zane is saying.
Engines,
Zane slurs again.
Fate engines.
Then she raises her hand and points, trembling, past Rain, before slumping forwards once again.
What in the hell's our fate engines?
Hale asks.
Something definitely worth burning,
Till says, coldly. Rain nods. She does not know any better than they do what the fate engines are, but Sylar's order from the briefing is still ringing in her ears. Capture. Excise. Preserve. The fate engines are what the Cavrone General wants. She would stake her honor on it. Cold runs through Rain like a winter's gale as she looks to Vander and his dragoons. They are still moving up through the chamber, in the direction that Zane pointed. Towards the fate engines.
We move, Rain says, as the Cavrone engage with the sighted once more. Now!
Hale and his command squad are slow, because of Zane, too slow to keep up with Severina Rain as she enters the fray alongside the Cavrone dragoons. She cannot let Vander and his regiment get away from her, cannot let him reach the fate engines first. She runs the edge, alongside Wick and his wild folk. Gareth Ord's flamer fills the air with smoke and ashes. Yulia Chris fights like a brawler. The two new recruits stick together, protecting one another. Wick is out alone, in the center of the storm, like always. Rain grabs hold of the wrist of a sighted fanatic who tries to cut her with a jagged glass knife and twists it. She feels the bones break. He drops the knife, but he doesn't give up on trying to cut her, reaching for her throat with his other hand. His hand is a silver claw of curved blades that Rain catches on the blade of her sword.
"For those who truly see," the fanatic rasps, "for the lords of fate and change."
"No," Rain says, "for the Emperor," and she fires penance at point-blank range. The fanatic spills backwards. His black blood hits the ceiling and hits Rain too. She spits onto the tiles before turning to face the next threat with her limbs burning. She refuses to tire, refuses to slow. Rain strikes and parries and takes cuts in return until she is alongside Vander. The Cavrone's commissar is cut and bleeding too. Between every swing of Rain's sword, she sees Vander cleave fanatics in two with his own. He kicks and punches and fights for his life. Around him, the Cavrone make clean shots with their modified rifles, center mass, like a combat drill, like a firing squad.
"Push through!" Vander shouts. "Courage in his sight!"
The words ring in Rain's ears. She remembers hearing them from Lucia, all of those years ago. Remembers the wildness of her sister's eyes, and the words that followed shortly after. Faith has been broken. Severina Rain has spent a decade hating her sister, dismantling every memory that she held dear in the belief that Lucia betrayed the Crusade. She has built walls around herself and her heart, and put all of that anger and hate into every battle she has fought, only to find out that it is all built on lies. Rain falters then, slowing for just an instant. It is how she sees so clearly the moment in which Vander sends a sighted fanatic staggering backwards with a strike from his sword. The fanatic falls flat on his back, and his layered, padded coat opens, revealing the cluster of grenades strapped to the sighted's chest.
"Emperor cannot see you here,"
the sighted says, and he laughs. And before Rain or Vander can do a thing about it, he triggers the bomb vest. The explosion takes Wick off his feet and puts him against the wall hard. The impact drives the air out of his lungs and fractures something in his chest. He sits there for a second, struggling to breathe. He shakes his head, but it just makes his ears ring worse. White blossoms of light print on his eyelids when he blinks. There's a fire roaring in the chamber. Everything is getting thick with smoke. He can taste it. Ash and death. Just like Quarter all over again. Around him, his wild folk are down. He hears moans and screams under the ringing in his ears, and sees Chris lying there. She's not moving.
"Get up," Wick says to himself.
He puts his hand out and tries to get to his feet, but his legs go and he falls again. He thinks maybe there's something fractured there too. The fall jolts the air back out of his chest. He can't do it. Can't get on his feet. Can't get to them. Not on his own. Wick takes one of the vials from a pouch at his belt. The liquid inside it is dark red, like old blood. His heart accelerates just from holding it. He knows the risk. Knows that he should have listened to Lai when she told him to stop. But he can't, because without it, he can't get up. Wick uncaps the auto-injector with his thumb and punches it into his leg. He takes a deep breath and counts it out and waits for the stims to hit him. For his vision to tunnel and sharpen. For his heart to fight like it's trying to get free. Then he gets to his feet.
It hurts so bad that it makes him shout, but he doesn't fall. He staggers through the ash and the smoke over to where Chris is lying. There is blood matting her hair and running down her face.
Yulia,
Wick says. He drops to one knee and puts his hand on her shoulder. Chris snaps awake and swings for him. It's only the stims that make him quick enough to grab her hand and block it.
Whoa, he says, that's enough of that.
Her eyes go wide, and she rolls to sit up. Wick helps her onto her feet.
Sarge,
she says, her voice raw.
What happened?
Wick remembers what he saw in the seconds before the explosion blinded him and took him off his feet. The Cavrone Dragoons firing their las guns, and in amongst them, the two commissars, Rain and Vander. Wick looks over to where the fire is burning itself out. The blast put a hole straight through the floor, cutting the wild folk off from the rest of the regiment, who were stirring on the other side. It turns several of the Cavrone into nothing more than a mess. He can't see any amongst the dead that wear the black. No sign of Rain.
I think they might have killed our commissar, Wick says to Chris.
Wick!
Hale's voice is hoarse over the vox.
Are you still alive over there?
For the most part, Wick says. What now?
Keep moving,
Hale says.
Run the edge. We have the witch slowing us, but we will make our way around to find you.
Run the edge, Wick says,
as if there's ever another way to live.
Understood.
Severina Rain comes to with a start and raises her pistol instinctively, pointing it to the empty darkness. It takes her a moment to lower it again and to calm her heart. Rain sits herself up. The action makes her cough, bringing up masonry dust and blood. She spits on the stone floor. Her head rings from the explosion.
The explosion.
Rain looks up to see the collapse. It must be 20 feet above her. Everything up there is on fire and thick with smoke. Rain can still hear Lasfire echoing down from above. But on this level, all is quiet, save for the settling of rubble. She has to get back up to her regiment and back into the fight. Rain gets to her feet slowly, leaning on the rubble to do it. She tastes blood again. Everything aches as the world turns around her. Very still bodies lie everywhere. Most are sighted, and yet more are clad in Cavrone blue. But there is one in Antari Splinter. All of them are surrounded by dark puddles of their own blood. Rain checks the Antari first. It is Tian, of the wild folk. He is burned so badly that she can only tell by what's left of his tattoos. The Cavrone are just as bad. Just as dead. Rain stops and tries to catch her breath. It is coming short and shallow. She puts her fingers to the vox bead in her ear.
Hail, she says. Acknowledge.
There's a roar of static that tells Rain her vox link is shot. She winces and takes the bead out. With the static gone and the ringing in her ears fading slowly, Rain can hear another sound. Someone else, struggling to breathe. She raises her pistol and snaps the stab light live. The beam illuminates the space. The collapsed stonework and shattered chunks of flagstone, shards of glass, and Lucas Vander, slumped against the rubble, pinned in place by the length of rebar that has punched through him at the shoulder. His right arm hangs at his side, useless.
Rain,
he says. She moves over to him, her boot sticking in his blood as she does so. Vander's face is drained white, but he is still scowling at her. His breathing is shallow too. It sounds wet.
I hate to say it,
he says between breaths,
but I need your help.
Rain doesn't move. She is still thinking about the fate engines and about broken faith. About that moment at the commissariat hub when his composure broke, just for an instant. She knows that she will not get another chance like this one to know the truth about Lucas Vander.
Rain,
Vander says again.
Are you addled?
Stop staring at me and help me.
I will help you, Rain says. But first, I want you to tell me what really happened to Mardan Tula.
What?
He asks, blinking into the light. You heard what I said, Rain says. Vander's scowl deepens. He struggles against the rebar, but gives up as the bloodstain on his tunic spreads, and his breathing starts to whine in his chest.
You saw what happened to Tula,
he snarls. Rain drops into a crouch so that she can look him in the eyes and read him more easily. I saw, she says, but I don't believe it. And if you were any kind of commissar, then neither would you.
You have no right to question my purpose,
Vander says through his teeth.
You are a damned half-breed with cowardice written in your blood.
Rain knows that he means every word. Vander has never been anything but honest about how he feels about her. It's that honesty that makes her question whether he could really be complicit in the actions of his regiment. Answer my question, she says. Tell me what you think really happened to Mardan Tula. Vander exhales a long breath.
Fine,
he says through his teeth.
I believe that it was suicide, just like the reports say.
He spits blood onto the tiles.
I believe that Mardan Tula invited the rope around his neck, even if he did not set it himself. He thought himself above consequences, above reproach. None of us are that, save for the Emperor.
So who do you believe would want Tula dead? Rain asks. To her surprise, Vander laughs. It is short-lived and sounds agonizing.
Everyone,
he says.
We are commissars. Every soul in the regiment wants us dead.
He gestures weakly past her to where the ceiling collapsed.
If you think for a moment that any one of those ferals you serve with are weeping over you right now, then you are more of a fool than I thought.
I would not expect them to, Rain says. I expect them to serve and to fight, and to do so with courage in the Emperor's name, and I trust them to know that I will have a bullet or a blade waiting if they don't.
Vander snorts. Trust, he says. There is no place in this world for trust.
So you trust no one, Rain says.
Not a soul, Vander says. Not the Cavrone, not you, or any of the others we serve with. Certainly not Tula.
He shifts slightly, trying to ease the pressure on his shoulder. The rebar grinds against his bones.
Not like you, Vander says. You trust your Antari, despite all that they are. Despite what you are.
No, Rain says. I do not trust the Antari. I understand them, and I know their limits, what will drive them and what will break them. There is a difference. Even as Rain says them, she knows that the words aren't entirely true. There is one soul amongst the Antari that she trusts, but she'll be damned if she'll say so to Lucas Vander.
And Tula, Vander says.
Tula was commissariat, Rain says by way of answer. He was a good man.
A good man, Vander says. Do you know that it was him who told me what your sister did? How she betrayed the Crusade by leaking information to our enemies? How she tried to get the Lord General Militant and half of High Command killed? That's a lie, Rain snarls.
Vander shakes his head. His breathing rattles in his chest.
Why would I lie about it?
He asks.
I gain nothing from speaking ill of the dead. Despite what you may think of me, I have no interest in being cruel for the sake of it.
What cause could he possibly have to tell you that? Rain asks.
His own, Vander says. Mardan Tula was a political animal, Rain. He told people what they needed to hear if it would get him what he wanted. That's what I meant when I said that he set his own noose.
That kind of act makes enemies. So you do believe that Teula was murdered, she says. But you are willing to let the act go unpunished because you feel that he deserved it.
I never said that, Vanda says. All crimes must be punished.
The words are half of an old adage that Rain heard 100 times or more during her training. Every slight answered for, she says, completing it. Vanda's green eyes are distant, unfocused.
Do you know what it is about you that I so hate, aside from your blood?
Vanda's voice is weak now. It has lost all of its edges.
I hate your honour and your loyalty, the fact that you sound so much like a commissar.
He takes a ragged breath.
I hate the fact that you are going to help me now, he says, and that I am going to owe you for it.
Rain hates it too. She doesn't want to help him, nor does she want his debt, but she cannot leave him to die without cause or confession. It's not how she does things.
This is going to hurt, she says.
Vanda nods his head. Rain holsters her pistol and puts her arms around his chest. She takes his weight and then lifts him, slowly and surely off the spar of metal. It snags against bone and muscle, making Vanda cry out as she pulls him free. She sits him down again on the floor, then takes off the sash she wears and winds it as best she can around his wounded shoulder. When she pulls it tight, he curses. Then Vanda gets to his feet unsteadily, without her help, and the two of them go to find a way back to their regiments.
The Manticore!
Lydia Zane hurls the words at Omatid.
Who is the Manticore?
Omatid laughs. She is bleeding from her nose and around her crystal eyes.
The one who holds your leash will learn his name, she says. The outsider clad in shadow black. Ask her if you truly want to know.
Zane snarls. The grass stirs and brushes against her, and her robes snap around her like wings. The singing tree shakes. She pushes harder on the blade at Omatid's throat.
You will tell me now, Zane says.
Omatid does not flinch at the knife's pressure. She merely smiles all the wider.
Oh, my sweet,
she says.
Do you think that you can intimidate me? Do you believe that you have me trapped here on this ghost of your beautiful world?
Zane feels a deep cold run along her bones then, that locks her in place. Frost begins to pattern the trunk of the singing tree around Omatid.
I am here because I want to be,
Omatid says.
I am here because of you and your little birds.
Zane does not mean to say the words. They just boil up from inside her.
You can see them,
she whispers.
Of course I can. Pretty little things they are, too. One black, one white, mirrors and opposites.
They are just echoes, Zane says, made by the things I have done, and nothing more.
They are so much more than echoes, just as you are so much more than Epsilon.
Omatid reaches out and puts her cold hands on either side of Zane's face.
I have watched you for a long time in the years gone by and the ones yet to come. Your fate lies not with the Antari or the blind. You are destined for enlightenment. But you must choose. Place your feet on the path to truth and follow it.
Zane sees herself clearly in Omatid's crystal eyes then.
No,
she slurs through her teeth, because in the reflection, she too has crystal eyes in place of her silver ones.
Your kin would have you break others until you yourself are broken,
Omatid says.
The Manticore would spend your strength like coin to change his own fate. They only seek to use you until there is nothing left to use.
Zane moans through her locked jaws, because the words at least are true, and Zane knows it. She has known it since the day she came into her powers.
The path awaits. The nine await,
Omatid says, sing-song.
You need not be lonely or hated. You need not be bound or caged. You can be strong and free, as I am.
Free,
echoes Zane's crow.
Free.
Choose,
Omatid says again.
Think of all that you could be.
And Zane does think of it. And it scares her more than the Manticore or the Fate Engines, or even death itself. Because there is a tiny part of her that sees the beauty in it.
No!
Zane screams the word, and the ice in her limbs shatters. She cuts Omatid's throat with the dark wood knife, but Omatid does not choke or spasm or tremble. She does not die. Instead, Omatid sighs, with blood running freely onto her many-coloured robes. Her fingers trace Zane's face gently as she lets go.
Until next time, then,
Omatid says. And then she vanishes, and Zane finally allows the dreamscape to collapse. A peal of thunder splits the sky as the sea boils away, and the singing tree burns and splinters and turns to dust. And then Zane's eyes truly open to the Sanctum of Bones. To Nuri Alai, and Ari Wrath, and Yuri Hale. Zane draws a breath that burns and makes her cough. Her kinfolk let go of her arms, and she falls to the floor, hard. She retches up blood and bile onto the tiles.
Hug's teeth!
Wrath's voice is an underwater murmur.
Zane!
Hale drops to one knee.
Where is she? Where is the traitor witch?
Lydia Zane looks up, with blood running down her face and the taste of acid and ocean in her mouth.
Gone,
she manages to say.
Omatid, he's gone.
Ord's flamer roars, lighting the corridor. Wick feels the heat of it at his back, like the balefire breath of the hounds from the witch dream. The reflected light glimmers in the gemstone eye of the sighted fanatic who is trying to kill him, turning the crystal red. The fanatic is built big as Chris. Wick cuts him deep, arms and chest. Those kinds of cuts should slow the fanatic, but they don't. He grabs Wick by his throat and slams him up against the wall of the sanctum. It knocks the air clean out of Wick's lungs and shifts his cracked ribs, makes him drop his knife from numb fingers. Wick struggles for air with his vision dazzling.
What do you see, Antari?
The sighted hisses through pointed teeth.
The edge of death?
Wick's vision is crowding with shadows, howling echoes in his ears, louder even than his heart can beat.
Not mine,
he manages to say. Then he curls his offhand and punches as hard as he can into the sighted's gemstone eye. Something in his hand breaks, but so does the sighted's eye socket. Wick feels the stone push in, and the fanatic screams and drops him. Wick falls hard, air rushing back into his lungs. It burns like several hells, but Wick gets to his feet, picks up his knife, and cuts the sighted's throat. Cuts his screaming short. Blood paints a line through the air, glittering like stars. Like stars. Wick takes a ragged breath and looks around himself. The corridor he is standing in is deep into the sanctum, far from the rest of the regiment.
right on the edge. The walls are arched and wrought from dark iron. Flickering, erratic lumens illuminate the corridor in stuttering bursts, showing up the ironwork jutting from the walls like teeth, and the puddles of black water rippling at Wick's feet as the sighted's twitching body shakes itself still. At the end of the corridor is a massive set of engraved doors. The carvings on them are of bodies laid open to the air, of cables and bones. Wick goes cold from the inside outwards. He's seen this place before, in the dream that Zane shared with him. Her voice bounces around in his head, unwanted and unpleasant. Blades at your back. Wick turns on the spot with his knife raised in guard, and finds himself looking at his wild folk, and at Justar, and the five that are left of his damned dragoons. There are no sighted, no blades, just those who run the edge. Wick lowers his own knife and tries not to laugh. He's not sure which of the two things is more of an effort.
Yulia,
he calls out to Chris,
get those doors open.
Got it, Sarge,
she says with a grin. She heads over to the doors and starts to set her charges. Despite her new scars and everything the sanctum has done to her, she still whistles as she does it. It's always the same song with her, something from home. It echoes strangely around Wick, making his ears ache. He moves away from the door and puts his back against the wall.
You might want to do the same, he says to Justar.
The Kevron sergeant looks at him with that same disdain as before, but he doesn't argue.
Your kind really do revel in it, don't you?
He says.
Fighting, burning, breaking.
Wick's smile goes no deeper than his teeth.
There's precious little else to revel in with lives like ours, he says. Might as well take what you can while you're still standing.
Justar shakes his head. Wick sets the detonator line and rolls it out as she takes her place opposite Wick, beside the Kavrone. She whistles out the last bar of that song, and then thumbs the trigger. The explosion happens slow to Wick. Light first, white to yellow, like a captured sun. Then the dust and plaster in clouds. Then solid chunks of wood land all around him, clattering off the ironwork. The noise of it rings out, and Wick hears Chris laughing, loud.
Spectacular,
Justar says flatly, dusting debris from his fatigues.
Your words, Highborn,
Chris says with that grin she gets from breaking.
Let's go and see exactly what it is they are hiding, Wick says.
He runs through the mess that's left of the doors, over debris and through smoke. Motes of fire spiral past his eyes as he tracks his rifle side to side, looking for sighted to kill. But Wick finds no sighted, no contacts. What he finds makes him stop and lower his rifle slowly. He goes cold again, from the inside out. 9 great grey caskets sit in the chamber, linked by cables and patterned with frost. The sigils etched into them burn like phosphor flames. The caskets connect by oil-slick pipes and tubes to a throne that bristles with needles. There is broken glass and blood on the floor around the base of it. The blood is old and painted into a shape that Wick can't keep looking at. One that seems to move. One that feels as though it looks back.
No good, Wick says.
He hears something else that Zane said then, clear as springtime sky. Worse than death.
What is this?
Ord has fear in his voice, honest and open. He is standing shy of that bloody spiral. They all are. Not one of them will cross it.
A witch circle!
Chris isn't laughing now.
That's a witch circle!
She is right. Wick knows it. Even if he hadn't seen Zane's dream, he'd be able to feel it in the air. Around him, the Kavrone move.
Secure the chamber! Justar is saying, and the machines.
Wick turns and stares at him.
What in the hells are you doing? He asks. Our orders are to capture and preserve,
Justar says. So, I am capturing. Preserving. His speech is slow and deliberate. It's not just the stims making it sound that way. Justar is doing it on purpose, as if Wick is stupid.
No, Wick says. Our orders don't extend to heretic machines, to witch circles. This isn't the kind of thing you preserve. It's the kind of thing you burn.
Justar steps up to him. The Cavrone is of a height with Wick, but much broader, built like a boxer. From the look on his face, he is used to using that to get his way. But then, going by his unbroken nose, he hasn't had to back that look up very often.
You don't get to decide what the orders extend to, Antori, he says. You shut up and enact them.
Wick thinks about those toy soldiers that High Command sent after Zane, and about the caskets and the terror she felt in the dream that she shared with him.
No, Wick says. I don't think so.
Justar goes for his sidearm. Wick sees the movement in half time, just like the explosion, and he snaps the butt of his rifle into the Cavrone's face before Justar can raise his gun. It knocks the Cavrone reeling, making him drop his pistol. A welter of blood hits the floor. Wick kicks the pistol away and lets his rifle swing by the strap. He gets Justar in a hold and puts his combat knife up against the Cavrone's throat. The rest of Justar's squad draw on him, but they can't get a shot without going through their sergeant. Wick doesn't have to look to know that his wild folk have drawn their own rifles on the Cavrone in turn. Tension fills the air like the charge before a storm.
Drop your damned guns,
Wick shouts at the Cavrone,
or I cut to kill. He's bluffing,
Justar says through his teeth.
I'm really not.
Wick presses on the blade enough to draw blood.
But please, test me.
Justar is breathing quickly under that blade. He has the heartbeat of something afraid.
Do what he says,
Justar orders his squad.
Lower your guns.
The Cavrone do as they are told, and allow the wild folk to disarm them and put them against the wall. Harrow and Jay keep their rifles drawn on them. Wick feels curiously proud of the Voidborn in that instant. They are truly wild folk now.
You will hang for this,
Justar says to Wick as he eases the blade from his throat.
You're a damned traitor.
Traitor, Wick says. Funny. I could say the same about you.
Then he hits Justar hard enough to put the Cavrone on the tile floor, unconscious. Wick orders Harrow and Jay to take the rest of them into the corridor where they can't interfere.
You take Justar, he says to Ord, and I'm going to help Chris set the charges. Dove,
Ord says.
Would you have done it?
Done what?
Cut to kill,
Ord says. Wick glances down at the blade in his hand. There is blood dried into the serrations. He blinks and looks back at Ord.
I didn't have to, he says.
Ord has got that same expression on his face as before. Only this time, Wick thinks he understands what it is. Disappointment. Wick watches from a safe distance as the machines go up. The explosion isn't white to yellow this time. It burns blue, and it sounds like screams. In the aftermath of it, he hears Justar laugh. The Cavrone is sitting against the wall with his hands bound. That broken nose of his has swollen up badly.
Here we are, he says. Now you really will hang.
Wick follows where Justar is looking to see Yuri Hale and the others approaching them. Zane is on her feet now. The witch comes close, stopping just short of arm's length away. Her face is painted with blood that is only broken by the tear trails from her false eyes. She is still crying now, somehow.
You burnt the fate engines, she rasps.
Her words make him flinch.
You mean the caskets, he says. What were they, really?
The sighted use them to cheat the after, Zane says. To trick death.
She looks at him sidelong.
All for the price of your soul.
Wick can't quite believe her words, because he knows for a fact you can't trick death.
not indefinitely. No matter what price you pay to do it.
Wick!
Hale's voice pulls Wick's attention from Zane. The captain has his las pistol drawn, and his eyes look cold as lake water. Ord is stood behind him. Lie, too.
Drop your rifle, Hale says. The sidearm and the knife, too.
Wick doesn't drop a thing. He just puts his hands up to show he won't use them.
Yuri, Wick says, the machines had to burn. They were witch work.
I know what the machines were, Hale says. Zane told me. This isn't about that.
Wick feels sweat run between his shoulder blades. He wonders how obvious the double dose he took is right now. Hale raises his pistol and points it for a kill shot.
Now drop your damned weapons like I ordered you to, he says.
Do as he says.
Zane's voice in his head is like a heated needle.
If you fight or you run, he will kill you.
Wick is dizzied by the words, because he can see the truth of them written in Hale's face. He slowly unslings his rifle and puts it down. Then the sidearm, then the knife. Wick is acutely aware of all eyes on him, of being unarmed and vulnerable.
Bind his hands, Hale says.
It's Lai who comes forwards to do it. Wick tries to catch her eyes, but she won't look at him. She just snaps the bindings shut around his wrists and steps away as if he's something dangerous.
Captain, wait,
Chris says. The combat engineer steps up beside Wick. All that blood and time spent has made her fiercely loyal.
Come on now, she says. Whatever is meant to have happened, there's surely no need for this.
There is a need, Yulia.
The words come from Ord. He stands there with dread in his eyes, as if he's the one with a gun pointed at his face.
Because he is a murderer,
Ord says.
He killed four souls, sworn to the throne.
Wick realizes then what this is about, and why Ord asked him about the bodies in the water, and cutting to kill. He realizes what Zane actually meant when she told him to watch for blades at his back. Chris laughs loud.
Shut up, Jer, she says. That's not true.
She looks at Wick, all of that loyalty written in her grey eyes, all of that faith.
Tell him, Sarge, she says.
Wick has been lying since he learned to talk, keeping secrets and carrying them with him, especially after quarter. It should be easy for him to lie to Chris now, too, but he finds he can't. It's that damn silver Aquila around his neck. It's so heavy.
Sarge?
She says again, and her voice breaks a little. And Wick watches as the loyalty and the faith drains out of her eyes, and is replaced with that same look he gets from everyone else. Disappointment and disgust. Chapter 14. Failure means death. It has been hours, or at least to Davin Wick it feels like hours. Hours of sitting with his back against cold, bare stone, waiting. He spent the first few minutes staring at the rough coat walls and counting the tiles on the floor. 56. Then counting the loops in the chain connecting the binders on his wrists. 10. Then the comedown hit him, and counting became too much. The headache first, pressing in like a storm front and pushing on the back of his eyes. The ringing in his ears. The shaking. Though some of that could just as well be down to the waiting. Waiting for death. Wick rests his head against the cold stone. It does nothing for his headache. He wonders if it'll happen in here. After all his running, it'll happen in the sanctum of bones, in a holding cell where the walls are marked with bloody scratches from whatever was held here before he was. If, after everything else he's done, he'll die for helping to save the life of a throne-damned witch.
Stupid, he says.
The room catches his voice. There's no echo in here,
So stupid. Wick doesn't mean to start laughing. It just happens. He laughs so much it hurts. So much that his eyes run, and he can't tell whether it's even laughter anymore. And then he hears the door bolt slide across, loud like a gunshot. It makes him flinch. Before the door can open, Wick runs his hand across his face and uses the wall to stand up. Because if this is really it, and this is where he dies, then he'll do it on his damned feet. Davin Wick. Severina Rain's outsider accent twists his name. Wick had thought her dead, just for a while, that he'd escaped her judgment. Wick looks at Rain standing there. Her shadow black coat is blood-spattered and torn by fire and cutting edges. She holds her bolt pistol at her side, her dark eyes unreadable. He realizes he should have known better. That she wouldn't die so easily. That you don't escape the judgment of a commissar like Severina Rain.
Commissar,
he says, and his voice is a rasp that sounds weak, which makes him angry at himself. Rain walks into the room, but she is not alone. Zane is with her. The witch is bound too, her thin wrists manacled, though Wick knows she could break them easily if she tried. It's a show of faith, of obedience. Wick's eyes catch with her silver ones, and a word pushes into his head.
Kin.
It's almost enough for Wick to start laughing again. Rain drags two chairs into the middle of the space. Sit, she says. Wick does as he's told, and Zane does the same beside him. Rain doesn't sit. She stands and watches them both, so still that she could be carved from dark wood. You know why you are here, Rain says. The charges set against you. Wick nods. 4 counts of murder, Rain says, against men sworn in service to High Command. Wick thinks about the lake in the witch dream, and all of those that rose to the surface. The real count is closer to the number of links in the chain at his wrists than it is to 4.
It was me, he says, the lot of it. Zane did nothing.
It's all of those dead that makes him say it. All of the things he has done. His ugly secrets and his sins make him try to save Zane, even though she's a witch, and she's already as good as damned. Because she is Antari, and so is he. And if he is to be judged today, then he'll take one decent act with him into the after. Zane flinches beside him, as surprised at his words as he is.
What are you doing?
She hisses.
Commissar, his words are false.
Rain shakes her head. She still has her pistol drawn. The steel of the casing glints in the lumen light, and her eyes glint too, as she stares at Wick. I know they are, she says. And those are the only lies that I will hear from you, Sergeant. Is that clear? Wick realizes that Rain has never fallen for any of his lies, that she has always seen through to the sharp edges of his soul. It should horrify him, knowing that, but it doesn't. Somehow it's a relief.
Clear, he says. Yes, Commissar.
Rain nods. Now, Rain says, the truth. Severina Rain stays standing as Wick and Zane recount what happened. The more they tell her, the more tempting it is to pace, to act, as they describe how 4 men sworn to